Morning, this is Wayne McLean, and welcome once again to the talk show here on 980 CFPL. Today we have two subjects for you, and you may wish to comment on one or the other, or both of them. The first one deals with a problem that continues to be with us in many parts of Canada. We're asking the question this morning, is racism on the rise in this country? Very recently, the Attorney General of the province of Ontario, Roy McMurtry, indicated to that parliamentary committee that's doing work and research on visible minorities in our country that anti-Semitism specifically, he felt, was on the rise in this province. He did indicate that he hoped racism generally wasn't. We've had a number of stories that have emerged as a result of this particular committee and its travels around the country. Recently, a member of Canada's Native Peoples communities indicated that racism in Canada is as Canadian as hockey night in Canada. That coming from David Ahenekew, who is the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations. He says racism is alive and kicking here. And the chief says that it's not only among certain societies, but also in the hearts and minds of lawyers and judges in some cases. And of course, he referred to the comments made by Senator Richard Donahoe a while ago. You remember those comments while sitting on a committee dealing with a constitutional amendment on Aboriginal affairs. The senator was quoted as saying, wouldn't it be simpler if they just did what they did in Newfoundland and shot them all, referring to Canada's native peoples. So we are seeing more and more stories emerging on this whole problem of racism, anti-Semitism in our country. Now, in just a moment, we'll be joined on our live line by Sharon Wolf, who is the chairman of the Canadian Jewish Congress Steering Committee. Recently, the Congress told this same parliamentary committee that Canada is the biggest exporter of neo-Nazi literature to West Germany. And the reason, according to the Congress, that this occurs is because there are not adequate controls on the dissemination of hate literature. We'll be talking with Sharon Wolf in just a moment on our live line, and we'll also be talking to you at 433-3121. Is racism on the rise in Canada? And the other question that is certainly on the minds of everyone as a result of the events in Lebanon over the weekend, do you think the United States Marines should stay in Lebanon? If you wish to comment on one of those topics or both of them, we'll open our lines for you now at 433-3121. This is Wayne McLean. Sharon Wolf is the chairman of the steering committee for the Canadian Jewish Congress. She's on our live line now. Good morning, Ms. Wolf. How are you today?
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning, Wayne.
Thank you for being with us for these few moments. We appreciate your time today. Let's begin, if we could, with this whole question of hate literature, anti-Semitism. Certainly that's one aspect of hate literature. What do you feel is wrong with the criminal code right now?
Well, the anti-hate provisions of the criminal code have been on the books since July of 1970. And while this legislation has unquestionably had a deterrent effect on some of the dissemination of racial hate material, unfortunately, it still persists. And in the 13 years that have elapsed since 1970, only one case has come before the courts.
And which one was that?
That was a case of Bazanga and DeRocher in Windsor, Ontario. And
I think that was anti-French-Canadian, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the problem that we feel is the fact that there are loopholes that still exist which allow for people to promote all types of racial hatred and get away with it. And we had made suggestions in our brief to the Committee on Visible Minorities to have some of these changes made. Now, one in particular, for example, it says currently that everyone who by communicating statements other than in private conversation willfully promotes hatred against a group is guilty. What we had suggested was that the word willfully be taken out. It is very difficult to prove that a person willfully intended, and our contention is that if someone publicly intends to hurt a group of people, that person must be stopped.
Ms. Wolf, let me ask you this, if I could. One of the examples, of course, of anti-Semitism, and probably a very blatant example of it would seem to me, of course, is the ravings of Mr. Keegstra out in Eckville, Alberta. And, of course, actions were taken not only by the Board of Education there, but certainly by the electorate to remove him from there and out of the classroom as well. But we're dealing here with another one, which I know you're familiar with, this material from Ernst Zundel in Toronto. And the material is saying, probably among other things, that the Nazi atrocities during the Second World War really didn't happen, that this was a hoax. Now, taking those comments, Sharon Wolf, from the Canadian Jewish Congress by themselves, is that really hate literature if somebody says, oh, the Nazis didn't kill 6 million Jews, indeed it was it's a hoax, it didn't really happen? Is that hate literature oven by itself?
Yes, we believe that it absolutely is. It because when you deny historical persecution for the purpose of promoting hatred, we feel you should be accountable for that.
But couldn't such a law, though, be brought against the Canadian government for its treatment of Aboriginal peoples, let's say, or against certain Japanese groups for the Canadian government's treatment of them during the Second World War?
I don't think that this is an either-or case, Wayne. I don't think that we are saying, as Jews, for example, that distortion of historical fact should be considered an offense only when it's perpetrated against us and not when it's been perpetrated against the natives or the Japanese or any other group, for that matter. What you're saying is a very good point, in that this, because under our present definition of hate literature, distortion of historical fact is not considered an offense, many things have been said and many ideas formed that have contributed to, it's really been a fraud that's been concocted, and people have suffered from that fraud. And so what we have asked the Canadian government is that when, again, it is proven that you are taking a historical fact, distorting it in order to hurt a group of people, this must be stopped.
The other comment in this particular story that I have is this Reverend Paul Melnichuk. He apparently is the pastor of Faith Cathedral, a Pentecostal church in Toronto. And I don't want to indicate or give the impression that all Pentecostal churches would feel the same way as this Reverend Melnichuk, but he did apparently in a sermon give the indication that Jewish businessmen, for instance, cheat their customers. Now, he later made an apology for this, but isn't there a place in a free and open society for someone to say something like that because people are going to say, well, the man's crazy. I mean, how could he make such a stereotype? Is that considered to be hateful pronouncements in your view?
I believe that people that have a public forum and are speaking within the context of public forum have a responsibility to the people that they speak to and a responsibility to the people that they're speaking about. I think it's quite different than two people sitting down over a beer when an unfortunate remark may be passed.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly Mr. Melnichuk is not, or Reverend Melnichuk is not, an example of all the Pentecostal preachers. He's
right.
One very unfortunate case, as Mr. Keistra is a very unfortunate case in a group of, you know, as a teacher. But these people, even one or two, over a period of time, can indoctrinate minds. And that was another area that we had recommended as change in terms of the hate legislation, because as it reads now, it says that if a person in good faith expresses or attempts to establish an argument on a religious subject, he cannot be convicted of an offense. Well, if that person is standing up, as a Mr. Melnichuk stood up and said that Jews were miserable people, that and went on to
there was more than just the comment about Jewish businessmen.
Yes, there was. There was a stereotyping. I would just as soon not repeat it, because I really don't want to give it any more attention than it already has. However, his accusations were very unfortunate. They were lies. They were not something that people should say about any group at any time.
In any circumstance.
In any circumstance.
Let me ask you to conclude, if I could, Sharon Wolf. What would you like to see, in layman's terms, in that criminal code specifically? I know you want to remove some of the provisions, as you've indicated.
Yes.
But what type of teeth would you want to be placed in the criminal code regarding the dissemination of hate literature and these pronouncements?
Well, I think that right now we know that there are numerous provisions in the criminal code which provide that, you know, reckless and irresponsible actions made without regard to their effect on others can be prosecuted criminally. And what we suggest is that the dissemination of hate literature and the communication of statements which promote hatred against identifiable groups be put within this category.
Thank you very much, Sharon Wolf. We appreciate your time this morning.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
On our live line from Ottawa, actually, Sharon Wolf from the Canadian Jewish Congress. Racism in Ontario, racism in Canada, how extensive is it? 433-3121 is the number. Let's go to our calls now, and also keep in mind that we will be having a brief interview with the Attorney General, Roy McMurtry, on this question of racism coming up shortly. Now, let's go to our calls. Good morning, Wayne McLean.
Good morning.
Yes.
On this topic that you're on today, I think once they started putting in all this human relations, discrimination, and I believe the French had a little bit to do with this, I don't think we would have had any of this controversy about, you know, all these different things that you were talking about and that woman. Was she from Canada or the United States?
Would it make a difference, caller, as to where she was from, in your mind? I'll answer your question, but does it make a difference to you?
Yes, a little bit.
Okay, can you, because I don't understand, can you help me understand why it makes a difference to you if the woman was from Canada or the United States?
Well, they do have a little problem, let's face it.
No, wait a second. Who has a little problem?
The United States.
Mm-hmm. In what respect?
Black and white.
Yes, that's true. There have been certainly racial tensions in the U.S. for years. Hopefully, these tensions are subsiding now with civil rights legislation.
Civil rights. Well, to each his own, as far as civil rights are concerned. Civil rights, to me, if they'd only learn to forget just a little.
Now, who is they that you're thinking of? The Jews?
Well, you take, for instance, now, when they brought up Montgomery from Alabama, Carmichael, and from Alabama, was he? Or Mobile? Yeah, I believe he was.
What, Stokely Carmichael?
Yeah, and we went to Montreal, and he taught to a university.
Mm-hmm.
And in that year, they had an uprising with the colored people in Halifax. I mean, in Montreal. And that's because they invited him up. And right after that, they destroyed one of their schools.
Okay, now what you're suggesting then, it is your opinion that the black leader or leaders who came to Canada came to stir up trouble in Canada. That's what you're suggesting? Okay. Now, my guest on the live line a moment ago was Sharon Wolf. You asked whether she was a Canadian or an American. She is Canadian, born in Canada. She is a member of the the Canadian Jewish Congress, so she's a bona fide Canadian.
Well, I didn't.
What difference it makes, I don't know, but anyway, that's the situation with her. Well, do you think people should be allowed to send hate literature in the mails promoting? No?
No, I do not believe in that.
Okay.
I do not believe in that. And also for the KKK, I think that should be done away with.
How about the Nazi Party in Canada?
Right.
Okay. You think that should be outlawed?
Yes.
Okay. And what about the Marxist Party or the Marxist-Leninist?
Them too. I think, but then again, you see, we never had all this, you know, where you could go to a place and say, well, this person discriminated me.
Yes. And discriminated against me, right.
Heck of a baloo, right? And you'd be put in jail or you'd be sued or something like that. Now, I have worked for Jewish people, and I don't think there's anybody like the Jewish people to work for.
I wanted to ask you, I'm sorry?
That was in Toronto.
Sure. Okay, you mentioned that at the beginning of your call about the human rights legislation, human rights. You don't think there's a need for such a mechanism in this province?
Since they've had this in the bill,
Yeah.
Okay? Between that and opening up these places in each and every town,
mm-hmm.
I think there's been more discriminating because of these places that you can say where you can go to and report it.
I'll tell you what we'll do then, caller. Certainly as the morning progresses, we'll hear, I'm sure, from a number of visible minorities in this community. And we'll hear some of the comments they have and some of the experiences they have to report.
Well,
and
I just want to say one more thing.
Sure, go right ahead and then we'll have to move on.
I have lived around down south of London.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived amongst so many European people. And my husband is European, but just the same. It doesn't make any difference what he is. You know, I never heard anything about people, if they want to talk their own language, fine. But you never heard of they communicated to you as hard as they possibly could. And there was nothing said. Now all of a sudden we've got so many that are doing nothing but discriminate, and you know they're not even Canadians.
Okay, I'm not following your they're not even Canadians. Who isn't Canadians?
A lot of these people that have come over, those are the ones that are doing all, there's a word I want to use, but I better not, doing all this complaining.
Okay, if somebody comes to Canada from Pakistan or the Orient or from France or England and they run into discrimination and this, they're here legally, okay? They've come to this country, they're here legally, they're not wetbacks or illegal aliens or illegal immigrants or whatever you want, they're here legally. And if they run into this, don't you think that these visible minorities have the right to complain and protest and say, look, here's how I'm being treated, here's what's happening to me?
Well, tell you the truth, I think if they hadn't opened all these places that you could go and complain to, I do not think there would have been half as many complaints as you've got today.
Thank you for your call.
Fine.
433-3121. Caller says that a lot of the publicity that's come as a result of this is because the government indeed has established these commissions and this legislation, and let's see how you respond to that. When we return, a brief interview with Ontario's Attorney General. On our live line now from his office in Toronto is the Honorable Roy McMurtry, the Attorney General for this province. Good morning, Mr. McMurtry.
Good morning.
Mr. McMurtry, you're reported as saying that anti-Semitism is on the rise in Ontario. How is that happening?
Well, how is it happening? It's you know, hard to be precise, except there seems to be a lot more anti-Semitic material around. A lot more has been distributed, and quite frankly, this is something about which our Jewish citizens are rightfully very concerned about it, and this appears to have occurred as a result of the aftermath of the tragic occurrences, continuing occurrences in Lebanon, and certainly it's a matter about which people don't like to talk about, but I think people, leaders of the Jewish community with whom I've discussed the issue, believe that it's something that just cannot be swept under the rug.
We certainly are aware of the ravings of Mr. Keegster, as I mentioned a few moments ago before you joined us. There certainly are other organizations that we've heard about that promote anti-Semitism through various literatures and distributions and all the rest of it. And we come into a situation that I'm sure some people have heard of. I'm referring to Mr. Gostick and certain publications that he puts out. Is there anything that can be done specifically with these groups to put a stop to this dissemination of this type of literature?
Well, it's a very controversial area, of course, and I've had a lot to say recently about the inadequacy of the current hate provisions of the criminal code, because there are so many obstacles to a successful prosecution. There has not been a successful prosecution in Canada since the legislation was passed almost 20 years ago.
Other than maybe in Windsor, I believe.
Well, yes, but that was a successful prosecution, but it was reversed on appeal.
Okay, what is lacking now, Mr. McMurtry, in your opinion?
Well, I think the defenses make the prosecution not totally impossible, but almost impossible, because they place such a heavy burden on the Crown, and, as they say, create so many possible defenses, and all drafted with the legitimate concern about the freedom of speech. Now, for example, I think one of the great problems that the Crown has is proving the willful intent. And in Great Britain, this was changed because the legislators, the parliamentarians, said, really, this places the police in an impossible position, because it's very difficult to prove what's going on in an individual's mind. In other words, a subjective test as opposed to an objective test.
So, in other words, what we're dealing with is legislation that makes it doubly difficult, because we are saying that we have to prove that the person making the statement or writing the publication intended to promote hatred.
That was
inside of him at the time, or her.
The Court of Appeal used terms like, we have to prove with moral certainty that the person not only obviously may have disliked the group that he was attacking, or she was attacking, but actually intended to promote hatred against the whole group, and that we must prove this with a degree of moral certainty. Now, my own view is that if on the legislation, from an objective standpoint, as opposed to a subjective standpoint, clearly appears to intend to promote hatred. Now, you know, we get into some fairly fine legal distinctions, but the basic distinction is between an objective test and a subjective test.
What would you like to see, then, to promote this objectivity and make it easier to get convictions?
Well, I think some amendments to the criminal code, and also, as I announced a couple of weeks ago, one of the areas that has been reviewed, it's also a very controversial area, and that is whether or not we should create a civil action, a civil cause of action, allowing certain groups to launch civil suits for group defamation.
In other words, sue for damages.
That's right. Civil damages as opposed to the criminal code route. There's also possible changes, additional changes that could be made to the Human Rights Code. As I say, I emphasize that all of this this whole area is a very controversial area, because on the one hand you have concern that I think all reasonable citizens should have to create reasonable protection for minority groups from these very vicious and scurrilous attacks. On the other hand, we have a new Charter of Rights which entrenches in our Constitution certain principles of freedom of expression. And in any free and democratic society, these concepts inevitably come into conflict. And of course, what we've always attempted to do is find the most moderate, pragmatic approach when these two important concepts do come into conflict.
Yes, listeners this morning might be wondering about that. How do you reconcile the need, it would seem, for tougher hate literature laws, as well as, of course, as you're suggesting, in our Constitution? Where do you draw the line, Mr. McMurtry?
Well, this, of course, is very difficult, in this particular area, you're dealing with competing rights, and you have to determine what is the more compelling right. And in this case, in my view, the more compelling right is to toughen up the criminal code provisions in order to place some greater limitation on the amount of hate literature that has been circulated in the community.
Mr. McMurtry, one last thing before we move on, maybe an opinion from you. As you well know, the parliamentary committee is traveling the country discussing racism, visible minorities, that sort of thing. Do you think that as a result of their findings that we'll see some changes to the criminal code in the near future?
I'd be very surprised if they didn't make recommendations of this nature. Be very surprised.
Thank you very much, Mr. McMurtry, for your time.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Bye-bye now. Speaking to us from his office in Toronto, Roy McMurtry, the Attorney General here in the province of Ontario. Let's go back to our calls now. Good morning, Dee. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning.
Hi.
I don't call you very often, but sometimes some people get on that phone and, my God, they make me mad when they start running down the Americans. Okay? Why does Americans get blamed for everything? The Canadians should stop and think how the Canadian Indians are treated and has been treated in the past. And also, the Negroes in the United States are treated much better now. They're treated more equal now than what they were years ago.
See, our caller was suggesting that black leaders from the U.S. years ago were brought into Canada for the express purpose of stirring up trouble. How do you react to a comment like that?
Well, I don't think she has a marbles right. I don't think she's right. I don't think that. I really don't.
Do you feel that...
I'm sick and tired of hearing people condemn the Americans for everything. Now, I'm a Canadian, okay? I have been here since the early 1940s,
okay? Mm-hmm.
I came over as a war bride.
Sure.
But all I've heard this past while is, oh, Americans are blamed for this, they're blamed for our economy, they're blamed for everything. I think we should stop and think that we should take some of the blame ourselves.
Okay, let me ask you this then, Dee. Do you think, in your own opinion, that the comments that you hear from time to time from some Canadians are anti-American?
I do.
Now, do you think that is a form of racism or prejudice or not?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Yes, I do, and I think the people that are calling in who are anti-American are not veterans. I'm a veteran, and you ask any of the veterans that fought alongside the Americans during the war, they're not against them.
I'm sorry, you're saying veterans that fought with Americans in the war?
Yes, in the war. They are for Americans.
Okay, all right.
For Americans. You don't hear them go against them. I think it's the younger generation that they're on about them.
Okay, Dee, thank you so much for your time and your call today.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. 433-3121 is the number. If you're out of town, we'll pay for it. And if you're a first-time caller, do mention that to Jeff when you call. In addition, if you want to be anonymous, that's okay. We certainly hope that you'll keep that in mind. And if you want to be anonymous, please mention that to Jeff. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hi, Wayne. I'm pretty good. How are you?
Fine, sir. Which topic today?
The racial prejudice.
Okay.
In my opinion, our own government has caused a lot of this racial prejudice.
How have they done that, Jim?
Well, if you look around industry where Canadians and foreign people are working,
mm-hmm.
if somebody does something against something, like this guy say, well, come on, you're a lazy guy or something like that, the first thing they yell is discrimination. But what about Canadians that are being discriminated against in jobs?
Okay, now, how is it happening? What is your perception? And certainly, I don't think somebody's going to say, boy, you're discriminating against me because you said I'm lazy. It would have to be more of a slur or a racial comment, wouldn't it? Or someone was denied a job or an opportunity because of race or religion or whatever.
No, but I found even where my wife works, if she even curses at them,
mm-hmm.
well, they're being discriminated against.
And they've said that to her or what?
That to her, they've run to her boss.
Uh-huh, and you're not exaggerating for the sake of making a point?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Also, in my own job, I can't tell you where I work because...
That's okay.
But I have noticed a Canadian doesn't stand a chance.
Okay, now, you make a statement here. It seems to be a pretty absolute statement and a pretty general one.
It is.
Now, are you sure you're just not making more out of it than what is the case? I mean, do you really think that a Canadian of any shape or description doesn't stand a chance? And what do you mean by Canadian? Someone who was born here or someone who's a citizen or what?
Who has fought for his country.
Mm-hmm. What about people who have come and are citizens now?
Some of them, they deserve what they get. In regard to jobs, some of them are very good workers. But some of them, they only get to be promoted in their jobs because of who they know, or their, as we call them, suckholes around the bosses. And a Canadian doesn't get a chance because the average Canadian doesn't do that thing.
Yeah, I tell you, go ahead.
They just do their job the best they can and hope they can be promoted or something. But
are you bitter? Are you bitter, Jim? Did you miss out on a promotion because it went to someone else who was an immigrant or?
Because at my age, I haven't tried for a promotion.
Uh-huh. Because you're making statements here that are just incredible. If you could hear yourself back on tape, you might agree with me.
I know what I'm talking about. I've been through it. But
what is it that you experienced personally, Jim?
Well, I did at one time, this was about 8-9 years ago, apply for an assistant foreman's job, which I didn't get.
Right.
And somebody that had been there less time than me, who was from out of the country, did get the job.
Okay.
Now, I know that he didn't have the experience at the time.
Okay, and this, of course, has set up a bitterness in you, I think, hasn't it?
Also, the way the government...
Now, is it possible, Jim, that he might have been more qualified, or that maybe it just wasn't the job for you? Is that possible?
No, I don't think so, because I worked right alongside the same person.
Okay, and because this person received the promotion, you sort of soured on others, too.
No, not on others, because after that I didn't bother trying, but it was just an own fact where we are that these things happen.
And you're absolutely sure?
Yeah.
You could. There's no possibility that you might be mistaken?
No, there's not.
And you were going to mention about the government. What's your comment there before we move on?
Our government, what did they do for these people when they started coming over?
Now, which people do you mean, these people?
Koreans?
Mm-hmm.
Pakistanis?
Uh-huh.
Now, they got off the boat, they had a home to go to, and a lot of them went directly on unemployment insurance.
Don't know if that's true or not. In some cases, these people were refugees. Now, would you feel better if they had come from West Germany or France or Britain?
No, I'd have felt the same. Because Canadians now, if you're laid off from a job, you've got a 6-week waiting period.
Mm-hmm.
These people, they get right off the boat.
Well, I don't think that's true, what you're saying, Jim. I think you're really inaccurate there.
In the newspapers?
Do you believe everything you read in the papers? And is it possible you might have misread?
No.
No?
The news, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this wasn't in the last year.
Sure, I understand. Well, Jim, let's see what other comments we get here.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe folks will agree with you, maybe not.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye. 433-3121. If you're out of town, call us collect. Morning, Gary.
How you doing there, Wayne?
All right, Gary.
How you making out today?
I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm fine, too.
Okay, your comment on our topic.
Racist.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the experience I had 2 weeks ago with certain people caused me so much trouble, wasn't funny.
Okay, let me stop the show here, if I could, to tell the audience. Our caller is Gary Monroe. He, of course, was in the news a couple of weeks ago in an attempt to have a discussion with Pierre Elliott Trudeau when he was exiting the Holiday Inn downtown and coming to the Free Press. And, of course, you were prevented from doing that. Why did you do it, Gary?
Because I asked Charlie Turner, I asked another MP that was there, to ask Trudeau if I have a meeting with him to talk to him why I'm being put down in this city.
Okay. Let me ask you this, then.
Yeah.
Do you really think in your own heart that's the proper way to proceed, to walk up to the Prime Minister of this country and have a confrontation? I mean, are you not aware of protocol and how to proceed? I mean, you know, people don't walk up to Trudeau and say, hey, I got a personal problem.
Well, they knew an hour before I was downstairs that I want to talk to him.
Yeah.
I asked Ferguson to go upstairs and ask him for permission. Nobody came downstairs and said, Gary, you cannot talk to him.
But did you really think that you had a hope in hell, Gary, of talking to the Prime Minister?
Well...
I mean, come on, Gary.
I had a hope that I could talk to him, because he wanted to go out to the university and talk to liberals. Why couldn't he talk to a citizen of Canada?
There's a venue, and there's an appropriate time and place for everything. I just... I was just knocked out, I must confess to you, by your action. Do you think that some people might look at you as being irrational, as being, a little odd? Do you think that's happened as a result of all of this?
Well, the liberals are very ashamed of me, what I did. The conservatives are kind of cheering a bit.
Oh, I don't think so, Gary. I'm ashamed, I'll tell you that personally, and I don't say that of any malice. I'm embarrassed and ashamed.
Well, that is your prerogative, mm-hmm, to say that you're ashamed, but still... Not knowing what I want to say to Trudeau is why I've been ripped off by lawyers, I've been ripped off by more professional people in this city, and you can shake a stick at.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there, Gary. Thank you for the call. 15 minutes to go before 11. Let's continue along at 433-3121. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Hi there, sir. Go ahead, please.
Why do you argue with people that get on the line? Why don't you just let them have their say?
Well, I don't know as I argue with people. I do ask questions. That's part of the job. But if you perceive it that way, that's okay. That's a fair comment.
Mm-hmm. Because it appears to me that you always seem to be the negative.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Not really. But can you give me an example?
Well, when that gentleman was talking to you about his job, you know, Jim?
Yeah.
Well, you were the negative. Like, you, I don't think you have worked out in jobs to know. You know what I mean?
No, I don't. I.
Well, I mean, in industry. You know what I mean?
I've been involved in industry now for, what, 20 years?
Yeah,
something like that?
You're involved in the radio industry. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's industry, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's not industry as per se. Industry, you like a plant where they manufacture stuff and things like that. You know what I mean?
Well, I have done work like that in earlier years. I worked in a canning plant. Believe it or not, I did in a canning plant years and years ago when I was a teenager. And I also slugged root beer when I was... starting out in radio, I slugged Stewart's Root Beer, which is similar to an A&W kind of thing down in Leamington. So what is the point, then, that you want to say? That
the point is that this gentleman was trying to get a point across to you, and you just seemed to block him off every time he turned around, you know? Like he couldn't get a point across. You were blocking him every time he turned around.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because the point was so outrageous to me, and I thought the caller was blaming his circumstances on other people, immigrants.
Well, maybe he had a beef in. You didn't let him get his beef across. You just blocked him every time he turned around, like you were in court when the lawyer says to you, what was this, how did this happen, or
mm-hmm.
say yes or no, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like you, you know, you're not...
Thank you, Jim.
I've talked to you many times before, you know. But I mean, that's what gets me when you block a guy when he's trying to say something.
Yeah, I think what the problem is here...
No, but this actually happens, what the gentleman said.
Okay, let me point out something if I could, okay? I don't want to argue with you, I'm not trying to... I think what you're saying is that you agreed with the caller, okay? And because I didn't agree with the caller... I think you're angry over that. I don't think we can go around blaming people of other races for problems that we have.
No, but I know how it works in the industry, you know, and I know that these people are like that. I mean...
Now, which people do you mean, Jim? These people are like that.
Canadians don't seem to hang around the boss and want to get ingratiated with the boss and stuff like that. But Europeans seem to do that, have that trait. Do you know what I mean?
No, I think you're absolutely outlandish and completely outrageous that Europeans have that trait.
Well, I seem to see that, and the part I'm working in is not European-like, you know?
Uh-huh.
But there's another section of my place where I work. They have a lot of Europeans working there, and I know that's what happens.
Unbelievable. Thanks for the call.
Unbelievable, but I mean, that's the truth.
No, well, that's maybe the way you see it, sir.
Well, I can only see what I see, you know what I mean?
I mean, you don't admit the possibility that you might be a little bit prejudiced.
Oh, I'm not prejudiced, because I like Europeans, you know? But I mean, that's just their trait, one of their traits, you know?
No. Gotta go.
I don't know what it is, but I mean, that just seems to be their way, you know, of doing it. It must be the way...
Look, here's what you're doing, sir. You're stereotyping people. You're making an exaggeration and an overstatement saying Europeans are like this.
Must be the way they do it in Europe, because in Canada, the people aren't like that much, you know?
Gotta love... Thank you for the call.
Okay.
Goodbye.
But we'd like to salute everybody. We'd like to...
A couple of lines available now. Thank you for waiting. Appreciate that.
Hello, Wayne.
Yes, thank you for waiting, man.
How are you?
Good.
I'd like to mention, I have a European background,
mm-hmm.
for what I have to say.
You offended by those comments?
No.
No?
I know how hard my parents worked when they came to this country in the mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still working very hard to keep what they have.
Right.
Now, I just wanted to mention one thing that happened on the weekend.
Okay.
In the Kitchener Record, there was an ad, and I guess there was a great big picture of this engineer, a civil engineer from Poland,
mm-hmm.
who was complaining that he wasn't able to get a job in his field in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing some menial work, and I didn't see the article, I just heard about it. Now, when I heard about this, I thought, gee, that's not fair. I think that anyone that comes over to Canada, if they do have some degree, I feel that there may be a time that they'll have to work up to be able to use that degree here in Canada.
Because mm-hmm.
there are many engineers out of work today.
Right.
And these are Canadian engineers. And mm-hmm. even a friend of mine whose son has his master's has not been able to get a job since he was laid off from Ontario Hydro.
Okay, so your point here is well taken, that sometimes there's undue publicity for a person who comes with a degree. You can't expect to start at the top. And indeed, there are many people out of work who have similar qualifications, and a person ought not to use legislation, particularly legislation about discrimination, to unfair advantage.
Right.
Sure.
So I feel that if anyone tries to do this, they're doing it the wrong way, you know, and naturally, someone's going to sympathize with them and offer him a job. It has happened here and in many places, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but isn't that a little different, though, than some of the comments we were getting earlier?
Yes. Yes, I feel that the aggressive and assertive people are naturally going to get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do that without using any other means, you know, then I feel they're justified.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to go to the media, to the news, or the newspaper, whatever, I don't feel it's fair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel that...
Yeah, I guess so. You feel which?
Well, I just feel that it's unfair.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people out there that perhaps they just wouldn't use that means
mm-hmm.
to get ahead.
Yeah, no, you make a valid point, and that's certainly true. I guess in the final analysis, though, it's up to the employer if they're going to fall for those tactics.
Well, I feel that perhaps some of the employers should be... trained also, you know, not to fall for that type of sympathy-getting person, you know. I feel that everybody should get to get ahead on their own merits.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yep, on their qualifications, their experience, and their ability to promote themselves.
Right.
Yeah, without resorting to any type of law to get undue sympathy or undue advantage.
Right.
Okay.
So, that's all I wanted.
I'm glad you did say it, and I appreciate the point.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Well, I'm not too bad.
Go ahead, sir.
You seem to have two powder cakes there, but no one's talking about the Americans, and I didn't phone on that bit, but I think they're in a lose-lose situation regardless.
No win, you feel.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
But on the racial bit, about 12 or 14 months ago, there was a group that wished to remove a couple of textbooks from use in our schools because there was some stereotyping there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't suppose if Fagan had been stereotyped as an Irishman, that if Shylock in The Merchant of Venice had been stereotyped as a German, that, you know, things would have been somewhat different. Those two textbooks were written,
What were the two, do you recall, Bill?
Well, Fagan in Dickens' Oliver Twist.
Okay.
And
Shylock in The Merchant of Venice, yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
Now, both those were written in a period of time when, the situation was not as it is in the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot do as, has been... 1984, George Orwell's character there was changing history to fit the present situation.
Mm-hmm.
And both those books have been used. Now, I'm not Jewish, and so therefore I don't understand how people in the 20th century can put attributes to Fagan or Shylock.
But you're saying there was a group that wanted these two removed?
That's right. They wanted them taken out of our school.
Yeah, well, that is a real extreme overreaction. It's tough, isn't it? With the word stereotype, it means different things to different people.
That's right.
I think when we get a comment, as we have unfortunately on the program this morning, Europeans have this tendency. I think that's a stereotype.
Yep.
But to say that a character in some great literature is a stereotype. Gee, I don't think so, and I'm sure you don't.
Well, I have to agree with myself. I'm a wee bit humble that way. But I think your first caller was one of the people who was on that campaign.
Mm-hmm.
She was from Ottawa.
Sharon Wolf.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know that. If I'd have known that in advance, she is with the Canadian Jewish Congress, and she's chairman of the steering committee, and her main concern was the Keegstra affair, this Zundel fellow out of Toronto, and the export of anti-Semitic literature. I wasn't aware of the other point.
Well, I think she was identified with it, but the point is that... that I'm trying to make is that in literature, a guy writes a book or paints a picture in the field of art, and 200 years later, it
yeah.
can be construed as something that was not at all in the intent of the
author.
Creator.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay.
Good point.
Right up.
Bye-bye now. McMurtry said the other day to this parliamentary committee traveling around on visible minorities that anti-Semitism specifically is on the rise. Recently, the same committee was told that there is a hurricane of racism sweeping this country, and that warning coming from the Federation of Sikh Societies of Canada, who again talked to the Commons Committee on Visible Minorities, indicating that Sikhs are frequently subjected to racial slurs, vulgar gestures, unfair treatment by the news media, discrimination by employers, and intolerance of religious and cultural traditions by immigration authorities, policemen, and transportation companies. That's their charge. Of course, the truth of it is certainly something that is going to become evident or less evident, depending on the nature of the probing testimony. Recently, a Mr. Ahenaku, and I hope I'm saying this correctly, told that same Commons Committee that racism is as Canadian as hockey night in Canada. Mr. Ahenaku is the country's top Indian leader, and again, he was telling that parliamentary committee the same thing. Now, maybe that's true, maybe it isn't as prevalent or as popular as hockey night in Canada, but the fact still remains that a conservative senator... Recently, Richard Donahoe turned to his colleague sitting on the Senate committee studying a constitutional amendment on Aboriginal affairs and said, quote, wouldn't it be simpler if they did just what they did in Newfoundland and shoot them all, end quote, referring to Canada's native peoples. So there is, in some quarters, an element, a trace of racism. We ask you your feelings and your opinions. The other topic today is, do you think the United States Marines should stay in Lebanon? Let's go back to our calls. Hi, Mark, and thanks for waiting.
Oh, good morning, Wayne.
Good morning.
Wayne, I'd like to say that I'm prejudiced about everything. In fact...
everything, okay.
Absolutely, and I think when I have a prejudice, and one of them is that I regard Vietnamese, Korean, and Pakistanian people as particularly industrious workers, and I found them very industrious, especially in my contacts with them.
Okay, so you're saying that you're having a positive stereotyping here.
The importance of my comment is that it's really just my opinion, and that it's prejudicial, but you find that very easy to accept because it's one you particularly agree with. And I find that's when we discuss racism and prejudice, this is the whole crux of the issue. It's all right to flatter a racial type if the other person is of that racial type and they agree with you. All of a sudden, that's not stereotyping or racism anymore. It still is. It's still prejudice.
Yeah, can we stop just a second here?
Sure.
Yeah, you make a good point there, Mark. But I'll tell you what I really prefer, personally.
What's that?
And I don't want to stifle discussion from people of the opposing view. I really prefer personally that we look at an individual.
Well,
okay, and say that person or these three specific individuals are industrious, they are reliable, and so forth.
Well, that is the only intelligent way to make assessments about any person. And of course, people who rely on racial stereotypes or racial assumptions are, of course, making it much harder on themselves to really understand the person they might like to get to know.
Yeah, I think you're right. I really do.
Well, when you bring that up, that's very important, too, to point out that all individuals use prejudice every day, every hour, every minute. The neighborhoods we choose, the wives we take, or spouse, the friends we associate with, the type of taste we have in cars,
Sure. Furniture,
people, friends, you name it, we employ prejudice. And prejudice is really a set of standards. Now, in a lot of people, they're really irrational standards. They're not based on benevolent and logical things like, what are you really like? They'll say, I see what you look like, and that's good enough for me. And they draw conclusions.
When people use the word prejudice, though, Mark, you know, without getting into semantical tyranny, when they use the word prejudice, though, what does it mean, generally speaking, in the vernacular and common usage?
Well, you and I have an understanding. It associates a negative stereotype.
Sure. Okay.
In other words, we're being derisive about something.
Yeah.
You know, prejudice is a very interpretive thing. And it's funny, when you dealt with the Sikhs, you know, they feel they are being prejudiced against here. But, you know, fortunately, when you mention that, I've done a lot of work on India. And do you know the Sikhs are extraordinarily persecuted in India alone?
Mm-hmm.
The most violent and murderous persecution to Sikhs in the world has happened in India.
Yes, I know.
And they are much safer here by any standard in the world than they are there.
And it is possible, and I think I know what you're going to say, it's entirely possible that in some cases, some members of that community may be overreacting.
It's not, well, even if they're correct, let's look at it this way. You see, the one wonderful thing about this country right now is that we have protection under law for all peoples. That's where you don't want prejudice. The law should always be totally impartial. People aren't like that. You see, people make up a diverse society. It's the code of law that's supposed to keep them benevolently equal towards each other in those jurisdictional cases where the law is involved. So when the Sikhs say, I've been aggressed, they can go to our courts and they know they can get satisfaction. They are, in fact, like all of the others. But when a man says, you know, I really resent you in whatever crude fashion he says, even though that's offensive, it's only words, and words don't hurt. You can let them hurt you, but they don't really hurt you. They don't really compromise your job. They don't really compromise how you feel about yourself unless you let them.
Yeah, you're a libertarian fellow, and you believe in personal rights and freedom of speech and all the rest of this thing. And I don't imagine, and you tell me, because I don't want to put words in your mouth, I don't imagine you'd probably support any hate literature bill of any kind or hate literature law.
Oh, and you're quite right about that.
Yeah.
I guess I would even defend the right of an irrational neo-fascist to say that the Holocaust doesn't exist. I know it did. I've written about it.
Yeah.
Certainly under no illusions there, but, you know, basically in this country, your government can seize anything of yours. They can take your house, they can take your car, they can take anything you own. The only thing they can't...
I don't know, you're making a wow.
Well, let me...
They can take anything I own.
With the pretense of law, like income tax evasion or seizure of whatever assets you have through taxes, they can eventually take anything they want of you. But what they can't take is what's inside your brain. And no matter how wild or woolly that is, you know, you are entitled to it.
But don't you wish in Nazi Germany, though, that there had have been some law to take what was inside of the hearts and minds of Hitler and his henchmen and butchers? I mean, don't you just wish that it would have been possible somehow to do it?
There was. After 1933, you couldn't say anything bad about Nazis. And that's my point, is that every country where they have laws that outlaw prejudice, racial prejudice, or certain stereotype prejudice,
yeah,
Northern Ireland, the Soviet Union, Eastern Bloc,
yeah,
they usually have a lot of violence because people can't take their passions out in print, so they resort to violence. But usually the state sanctions a certain scapegoat, like in the Soviet Union, it's Jews. In the Middle East, it's the Jews. In Northern Ireland, it's Catholics. I mean, in other words, certain groups will sanction a certain kind of prejudice because that's the one they agree with. And that was my original point, is that we are favorably inclined to prejudice if we agree with it, and we are hostile and very angry when we disagree with it. And unfortunately, what happens is these interest groups use the law system to further racial stereotypes that they agree with, and penalizing others for doing the same thing in their own bizarre way.
Okay, Mark, one quick one and I gotta go. Do you really think a guy should be able to stand up in a church pulpit and say Jewish businessmen are dishonest, that Jews are slime, you know, and on? I mean, I could really get, you know, gross on the radio here, and I don't want to do that, okay? But do you think a guy should be allowed to do that in a church?
If people are attending and they wish to hear him say that, yes, I do. And it's tragic, but I think that has such illuminating, wonderful consequences that people can say to themselves, you know, even with an idiot like that standing up there saying it, it's still a free country. He won't go to jail for saying that crap.
Okay, now should a guy be allowed to stand up in a place and let's name names and say about Herb Gray or Bob Kaplan?
Well, I think,
and make comments that are derogatory and racial and vicious, should they be allowed to do that?
Well, one thing we have to determine is where this is being said, you know, what you and I say in our own home, because it's...
Oh, yeah, and our caller, or at least our guest from the Jewish Congress, said the same thing.
Oh, well, that's a very important distinction. You know, when I print something in a newspaper or whatever, I would theoretically own that newspaper. When I speak in my home, I am in my own home, sure. And I own it, and I'm entitled to it. If I speak on the street, where we acknowledge that this is in fact public or everyone's property, and that everybody is entitled to the same respect and consideration on that public property, then, of course, we don't have that right. And there's that important distinction to make.
Mark, let's leave it there.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Good discussion. 14 minutes after 11. Let's continue along. Lots
of Borovoy, of course, is the counsel for the Canadian Civil Liberties Group Association. Which is it, Mr. Borovoy?
Well, it's association.
Okay.
We're also a group.
Mr. Borovoy, we've been talking this morning, as you probably know, about the hate literature that is being disseminated from some quarters. Mr. McMurtry was on saying there has to be a change in the criminal code, or at best, a prosecution under the civil a civil action. How do you feel about hate literature bills and people promoting racial hatred and discrimination in public places such as churches and so forth?
Well, of course, I deplore the promotion of hate material against racial and ethnic groups, but legislating against it is another matter. The great problem with legislation in a field of this kind is the impossibility of defining precisely what you would like to suppress so as not to run the risk of nailing a lot of other people in the same net. If I can just give you an example.
Would you?
We've had the hate propaganda section in the criminal code for a number of years. It was used a few years ago by the police in the streets of downtown Toronto to arrest some young people who had been handing out literature at the Shriners Parade, which literature bore the words, "Yankee, go home."
Mm-hmm.
And although the Crown Attorney had the good sense subsequently to withdraw the charge, those young people had their legitimate free speech rights suppressed, and they spent the better part of a day in jail. In the United Kingdom, one of the few convictions registered there under their counterpart to our hate law was a black power advocate. And though I may not hold any special brief for what they say or what even some of the anti-American radicals say, a democratic society has no business prohibiting speech of that kind. So the problem you have, in short, is that you aim to suppress one type of racist, you run a terrific risk of suppressing a lot of other people, and on balance, I don't think it's worth it.
Well, earlier in the program, we had Sharon Wolf on from the Canadian Jewish Congress, and we touched on a number of things. The one point she was making is that the criminal code as it exists now, it is necessary to prove, as I understand it, Mr. Borovoy, that the person not only made the statements, but also intended to promote hatred and bigotry. And her comment was, boy, that is very, very subjective, and how do you do it? Do you know in your experience of anyone who has been convicted under these hate literature laws, or people who have indeed had their rights infringed upon by the legislation?
There have been very few genuine racists even prosecuted under this section, but as I indicated to you, it has been used to harass non-racists, and that's the difficulty, because you can't define it with sufficient precision. A number of years ago, Jewish leaders and other members of the community hailed a decision of the Supreme Court of Canada which upheld the right of Jehovah's Witnesses in the province of Quebec to say some very nasty things about the Roman Catholic Church, which they believed, rightly or wrongly, was behind the Duplessis persecution of the Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, the difficulty we have is while we believe they should be free to make those criticisms, How do we write a law that distinguishes between the freedom we want to give to them and the suppression we'd like to visit on some of these awful racists? And all I'm saying is you just can't do it.
So we have a dilemma that, in your view, probably won't be solved in the near future, if ever.
I think in a democratic society, unless you are facing a terrific danger, and of course clear and present dangers can make a difference, unless you are, I think democratic societies have to opt to run some of these unpleasant risks as the necessary price of the freedoms we want to have.
Including such groups as Nazis and KKK people here in Canada.
Until such point as they constitute presently or foreseeably a much greater threat, I fear that that may be so, because the price of trying to suppress them is to run the risk of suppressing Jehovah's Witnesses and anti-American radicals and whoever else, and I don't think a society like ours should be doing that.
Thank you very much, Alan Borovoy. Appreciate your time and such short notice.
Good to talk to you.
Goodbye now. Alan Borovoy from his office in Toronto, the legal counsel for the Civil Liberties Association here in Canada. Mr. Borovoy makes some very good points. How do you feel about his comments? Until such a group as the KKK or the Nazis or such people as Keegstra or whoever else you want to name present a real and viable threat to minorities and to our society, we must indeed run the risk and give them the freedom to speak and to print. You agree or disagree? 433-3121 is the number.